This is Sam Edwards, proud sponsor of Heritage Radio Network, SurreyFarms.com.
This is Meet Your Maker on HeritageRadioNetwork.com. It's the show where we do exactly that. I'm your host, Rachel Wharton. My guests today are two blossoming kings of condimentation, Mark Ramadan and Scott Norton. They are two of the partners in Sir Kensington's Gourmet Scooping Ketchup, which is now showing up on a growing number of gourmet burgers around the city. But before we talk about their future plans, I want to go back to the past, to 2005, I think, when you guys are college students at Brown. And Scott, you go to California. Your friend is like, there's so many mustards on the shelves, on the grocery store shelves, but there's only one ketchup, or maybe two. So you go back to your friends at college, and you think this is a good idea. Maybe we should start a ketchup company. But none of you cook, none of you have developed recipes, none of you work for families that have been spent years and generations making condiments. So what's the very first thing? What do you do? Do you remember the very first thing you did?
Google.com.
Oh, right. So that's what you Google ketchup.
Where to start. Yeah. And, you know, we never even, at the beginning, we were just curious. It wasn't something like, let's start a ketchup company. It was just really, I wonder if we can make a ketchup that is still called ketchup, but is significantly different and provides a choice from the ketchups that people would know. And so we first looked at the history of ketchup and learned how ketchup had evolved and looked at different recipes for ketchup throughout history and looked at the current different formulations of really homemade and more like chef's ketchups.
Uh-huh.
And then we started prototyping. So we prototyped about 8 of these ketchups in our kitchen.
Did you guys live together at the time?
Or? No. Scott had an off-campus apartment that was way nicer than my dorm room, so we were cooking there.
And so we covered the walls with protective material, and we wore sunglasses mm-hmm. while we were cooking so that the splatter wouldn't hit us in the eyes. And we made 8 different batches of ketchup.
And where did those recipes even come from? Like, how did you go about doing that?
They came from all sorts of... I mean, we stole some from Epicurious. Uh-huh. There were some that were in recipe books. And ketchup, there are a lot of different recipes for homemade ketchup. And some of them are good, some of them not so much. So it was taking that variety and sort of picking the ones that looked and sounded the best. And then we made a few on our own. And then we had this big tasting party where we had picked 8 of the... of the best ones, and then we solicited everyone's feedback.
And I think the key part of that process was looking at the functional components of ketchup.
Right.
Because ketchup is one of the few foods that has all 5 basic tastes.
Yes.
Sweet,
yes.
Salty, bitter, sour, and savory.
What are some others, actually?
Well, those are it.
What are some other foods?
Other foods, other sauces, like
a barbecue sauce has that. It's
right.
A little on the sweeter side. Like what most mustards are missing is the sweet component.
Right.
You know, cheese has a lot of savory umami, but it's not sweet, you know, and
marinara has that as well, but because it has less acidity and less sugar and it's more watery than ketchup, it's less of an intensive, you know, maximization of all those different tastes.
Is this already something in your head when you were making these first 7 or 8? This is already something
you're
thinking
about. It was part of the research process.
Yeah.
So we researched it, and we looked at all these recipes, and we saw, okay, the vinegar is the utility for the tartness, and the sugar is the utility for the sweetness. And obviously the tomato has all of these already in it, and so it accentuates sort of the essence of the tomato.
But I'd say that if people have it ingrained in them, what those 5 basic tastes together taste like.
Right.
So that's when, if you taste something like a house-made ketchup and it's not the right balance, that's what gets you to say, oh, this is marinara sauce, not ketchup. Or, oh, this is like cocktail sauce, or it's like this, that, or the other. And that's the instinct you have if it doesn't have that balance.
Uh-huh.
And so
categorize it as something different, which is kind of,
right.
I mean, because one of the reasons I love talking is because I remember distinctly reading the Ketchup Conundrum,
yep.
the article in the New Yorker, and it's amazing to me how much the landscape has changed, because I actually have a little bit of it. I wrote it down so I could read part of that article, because it basically ends with, like, I guess ketchup's just not spaghetti sauce or Grey Poupon. It's just never going to happen.
Yeah.
And that article probably was like
2006, I think.
Yeah, it was after you were already starting.
No, it was before. That was part of the original research. It was an inspiration.
Right.
Because we didn't believe it, basically.
Which is amazing, because you read that article and you come away thinking, because the guy, like, you know, there's food labs in New Jersey.
It's funny. Malcolm Gladwell is a phenomenally persuasive author.
Yes.
And one of the researchers he consulted in that process was a fellow named Howard Moskowitz, who's mm-hmm. the one that worked on those pasta sauces. And Howard actually called us out of the blue after he had tried our spice ketchup.
Are you serious?
And he said, you know, I remember tasting all those ketchups with Malcolm when he was writing the article, and you're just way better. And so he took us out to lunch, and he hooked us up with a few people, and it was great to see someone from that world that, you know, was essentially damning the options of ketchup to really, you know, to sort of knight us in a way and say, okay, move forward in this process.
And we were sitting at a lunch with him, and he had all his research associates, and he was right across from us. He was literally eating the ketchup with a spoon. It wasn't going on anything. And this is like the foremost expert on ketchup.
So phenomenal individual.
You had blown his mind.
Blown his mind.
That's totally amazing, actually.
And I don't think it's not so much that we're amazing cooks. It's partly it was we got lucky with the original formulations. Partly we listened to feedback. So when people wrote their comment cards, they said it should be spicier, it should be sweeter, this, that, whatever. We tried to make it better. But also, I don't think when other people have made house-made ketchups or when restaurants are making it, maybe there isn't that same attention to the balance of the five basic tastes. It's a little bit more about the, you know, something that's a very fruit-forward, or it's very, you know, a house ketchup that's unique in way XYZ. But that takes it away from the realm of ketchup pretty significantly.
Yes.
So we always had balance in mind.
And even still to this day, I think, I can't remember which restaurant it was. It was a restaurant here in Williamsburg, and, you know, it's totally farm to table. You know, one of the owners owns their own farm, and he said, you know, we used to make our own ketchup, but, you know, people just so want Heinz, you know, now that we just went back to using that. And I think it's exactly what you said, is that they were making a condiment. They weren't, and now you've made ketchup.
There's another component of that, of when a restaurant will make their own ketchup, and that's that they serve it sort of as a house-made sauce, but they call it a ketchup. And part of what ketchup means to people is the experience of the bottle. It is seeing the certain flow of the actual ketchup itself and the viscosity. And I think that, you know, one of the things that we tried to really hit on was, how do we be just different enough from the ketchup that people are used to, but people will still call it ketchup? And putting it in the bottle at a restaurant immediately communicates, okay, this is something that can be called ketchup, because it comes from outside the kitchen. Whereas ketchup isn't normally thought of something that comes from within the kitchen in an unbranded context.
Right. It needs to be. You guys have spent a lot of time thinking about every detail of this. It needs to be. The jar gives it status in a way.
Correct.
Like, this is real. This isn't some funky house ketchup that I'm actually not going to like that much, but I'm going to be embarrassed
to admit. It's very counterintuitive, you know, that people would go to a really nice restaurant and
want the bottle.
Yeah.
Wait, well, so when did that thought kind of crystallize in your minds? Early on?
We from the very beginning knew that most people ate their ketchup in restaurants. So it was always part of the original plan. If we were ever going to do this, we had to be able to work with chefs. But in terms of when we sort of figured out that it needs to be on the table in the bottle or something like that, I think it just sort of came over time. I don't know if there was ever one moment of, this is how it needs to be done. But if you look around, you know, you go to any restaurant, any average restaurant, they have, you know, you walk in and you're overwhelmed by the restaurant, the branding of the restaurant, the beauty, the aesthetic of the restaurant, all the restaurant's food, there's a bottle of Heinz on the table.
Right.
And it's the only thing you see. So people are used to having that association with ketchup.
And a Heinz bottle, the old one, they're elegant,
yeah.
I think. I like them.
They're classic.
Yeah.
There's nothing wrong with the bottles, and that we wanted to create a new version of that sort of appeal.
So this is before you're actually producing it, you know that you want it to have this shape, something special.
Well, from the very beginning, we wanted to communicate what the product was before people tasted it. So we wanted people to look at it and say, ah, okay, I can kind of guess what this is going to be like as an experience. And choosing the square jar, choosing a glass jar instead of the typical scalloped ketchup jar, instead of a plastic, and making it English instead of American is some of the sort of the messaging tools that we use to signal that we were different.
And one of the things from that Malcolm Gladwell article, I mean, it basically said there were you had to do two things to make a new ketchup. You either had to come up with this incredible marketing campaign like the Grey Poupon, the guy leaning out of the Rolls or a Bentley, or you had to come up with some category that people had never had before, like chunky spaghetti sauce. And it just occurred to me as I was rereading this morning that Sir Kensington is kind of like, was he meant to be the guy leaning out of the car with the Grey Poupon? Was that in your mind back then?
Well, he's definitely someone that we want people to associate with as that little voice inside of them that is someone that really strives for quality and that is like in a way a bit of a sort of a whimsical snob,
right?
And that is someone that we want to bring out, and people kind of want to associate with that personality within them, and especially when it comes to food, people want to know that they want to feel like they know what they're eating, and they want to also be entertained,
right? And so, I mean, you've spent countless hours creating this backstory for Sir Kensington that's totally hilarious. I mean, is he like a person to you at this point?
He's like a grandfather I've never met.
That's exactly it. Yeah, very well put.
Yeah, I mean, he's part of our, literally part of our fabric, the fabric of our lives. I mean, you see pictures of him constantly, and he, we've been asked before, do we want to animate him? Do we want to bring him to life, give him a voice? And I think that's taking it to a level where we're not sure what's happening yet. And it's not to say it won't happen, but we haven't been ready yet.
What was I going to ask? For people who are not looking at a jar of Sir Kensington, would you describe him for listeners? What he looks like?
Sir Kensington is a turn of the century Victorian Gilded Age gentleman. He sports a monocle, a top hat, a cane, and he has a 1,000-mile stare.
Okay, what do you mean by that?
Like he's looking off into the distance, and he's a bit stone-faced, but there's sort of the smirk of excitement for the future.
Well, and...
And he has a magnificent handlebar mustache.
Right, which is embossed in the bottom of the tiny jars, this food service, the 2.5 ounces, how much they are?
So, 1.5.
I could take it on a plane.
You could definitely take it on a plane.
That's very
handy. We do it all the time.
And wait, so what does he wear? Does he wear, like a vest and...
Yep,
I don't know if I've seen him from the
head
down.
Yeah, he wears a vest and a coat with tails and a white shirt, a black tie, and, some leather shoes.
And
inside of his cane, if you unscrew it, is another smaller cane.
Right.
Both are carved from the tusk of a narwhal.
Why does he need the smaller cane?
In case...
Well, you never know.
You never, right. You really never know.
Yeah. Yes. When he is... Yes. Okay. And he also he's the creator of this ketchup. It's from the count, right? For
that's
the Russian
right.
Countess.
That's right.
She needed something for her Kobe steak.
It was. He began to throw these salons in Europe, and the Emperor of Japan was visiting, brought Kobe beef, and Catherine the Great of Russia, the great czaress, said, "I can't wait to try this beef. And by the way, Sir Kensington, have you got any ketchup?" And he goes into his kitchen and he starts playing the ketchup, and he realizes, "Oh my God." Looks at the label of ingredients and says, "I can't serve her high fructose corn syrup. This is the Tsaress of Russia." So he starts making ketchup, brings it out to her, and that is the fabled birth of the ketchup.
And what was I going to ask? So you talk a lot on the labeling and in your product backstory about the quality of the ingredients, how it's not high fructose corn syrup and it's not tomato concentrate. And are these things that you wanted to achieve way back from the very beginning?
Absolutely.
It wasn't like completely part of the food consciousness at that point even.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's exactly right. That in 2008, there was, at least where we were in Providence, there wasn't really that sort of attention paid as much to natural, organic, that sort of thing. And we went to Whole Foods and we were looking at the other ketchups, and there's a Whole Foods brand, there's Annie's brand, there are other ketchups, but they were all, to us, trying to imitate Heinz in some way, mostly in bottle shape. They had the same ingredients, same everything, but maybe it said organic on the bottle.
So there was organic and fructose corn
syrup? Well, it was organic refined cane sugar.
Right.
Which, for anyone who's concerned about sugar, is not much better. Right. And so when we were thinking about, well, if we're going to make something that's different, we should really be different. We shouldn't just use the same bottle and the same ingredients. So the most important thing to us was using whole tomatoes. Everyone, including the organic ketchups, use concentrate. Mm-hmm. It sort of, aside from stripping nutritional value out of it, strips the taste, strips personality out of what you're supposed to be celebrating in a ketchup. And so by using the whole tomatoes, you get the texture, and you also get the natural sweetness of the tomato rather than having to add it back in artificially.
Was that one step, using whole tomatoes instead of concentrate, the hardest part to overcome and getting the flavor balance right? Because isn't it part of why ketchup tastes like ketchup to us, that concentrate flavor?
I think that was... It wasn't so much the difficulty in the balance, but it was the difficulty in what people expect when they're dipping a fry into ketchup, which is uniformity and stickiness, and we don't have that. But we're proud of that. I mean, you know, that's to us, that screams natural.
Our mm-hmm. ketchup's not for everyone.
Right.
Yeah.
Who's it not for?
Well, I think that, you know, there are people that... there's a certain category of comfort food that is about not change. You know, it's about not changing something. It's about something that you know exactly what it's going to be like. And, our ketchup is for people that want to push the envelope a little bit and that want to consider themselves to be innovators. And so if you're really looking for something, you know, that you've had all your life, then there are perfectly fine ketchups out there for you. You know, we're not trying to become the only ketchup. You know, what we're trying to promote is choice.
And with that, we're going to take a short break. And when we come back, we're going to talk about how ketchup came to be ketchup in the first place. Thank you, guys.
The following program was sponsored by S. Wallace Edwards & Sons. Summertime is not the only time when barbecue is welcome. At S. Wallace Edwards & Sons, Sam Edwards has been working his magic on ribs, briskets, thick-cooked pulled pork, and much, much more. Add a few of their sides and the party is complete. Entertaining has never been so easy. To order, go to virginiatraditions.com.
Right. This is Meet Your Maker. I'm your host, Rachel Wharton, and we are talking today with two of the founders of Sir Kensington's Gourmet. I'm never going to be able to get that right. Sir Kensington's Gourmet Scooping Ketchup. But I want to talk about, because you, as you were saying earlier, that to create the product in the first place, the first thing you did was go back in time and figure out what ketchup is and was. And so I want to talk about that a little bit. So where the hell did ketchup come from? Which is not at all what people expect, I think.
Well, it was in the late 1500s when the Dutch and the English sailors and traders and basically empire men of those empires came to southern China. Ketchup is actually a Chinese word from the southern Min dialect, and in Cantonese it actually means fish sauce. The populations there were actually seasoning their foods with a type of fermented fish sauce that had the very savory, very salty, acidic components of what we know about ketchup. But it didn't yet have that sweet component yet. And they actually brought the sauce and brought the idea of the sauce, because it was such a phenomenal seasoning for bland food, back to Europe. And the Peruvian deserts, which were the home of the tomato,
right,
had recently been discovered by the Spanish. The Spanish brought these tomato seeds and the tomatoes back to the New World, back to the Old World, Europe. Mm-hmm. And it was there that first the tomatoes were combined with this concept of a fermented fish sauce. And because the Europeans weren't able to really ferment the fish in the right way, they would try to make oyster ketchups, walnut ketchups, mushroom ketchups.
Mushroom was the most popular, more than ketchup, more than tomato ketchup, right?
Yeah.
And if you look at glutamate content, which is essentially the indicator of this umami, the savory, the mushrooms are extremely high in it, which is why they used it. But they found that the sweetness of the tomato, along with that savoriness of the tomato, was really, you know, getting to what people were looking for in something to season their food. There's a hotly debated history of it, whether or not that ketchup first became popular and known as the tomato ketchup in Europe or in America, but it became phenomenally popular in America regardless of where its origins were.
So we kind of took on the tomato as our own, whether or not it was created here, invented here. I think the tomato basically spoke to Americans, right? Or from the beginning.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Well, what was interesting, I recently watched a biopic on Henry J. Hines, which was fascinating. He was one of these old school industrialists. I mean, he built an industry, and that industry was canning. He was one of the most trusted names in canned preserves, that sort of thing. And so ketchup fit into that.
57 flavors.
So the story of 57 is actually really interesting. So it was always ever just called Heinz. And on a trip to New York once, and this was well into the company, so they were pretty successful and they were pretty big. And he was on a trip to New York, and he was on a train coming from Pittsburgh. And he went by a big billboard, and it said, it was for a clothing brand, and it said something, something, the brand of the clothing, 27 varieties. He's like, oh, 27 varieties, that's good. You know, we should have a number. He's like, I wonder how much we have. And he started counting. He's like, 55, 56, 57. And he landed on 57. He's like, that just sounds great. So he went back, and of course they had like 100 varieties by then of different products, but 57 just stuck.
Really?
Yeah.
It still sounds great.
It's a good number.
Like, everyone knows that, and they have no idea what it means. It's still on every jar.
Is that a prime number?
A what number?
Is that a prime number? Maybe one of your listeners can figure that out.
Right.
Yeah.
And tweet us and let us know. We digressed. That was pretty far. That wasn't even that long ago in the history of ketchup.
No, that was in the turn of the century. In like early 1900s is when that was going on.
So I recently had this discussion with someone where they were saying, oh, ketchup was just one of a million fruit chutneys that Americans made. And I was like, I didn't think that was, after interviewing you guys before and then spending like way too much time getting lost in ketchup history.
It's easy to do that.
I wasn't sure if that was actually true. It seems like ketchup was always more the savory. It wasn't like just one of a million fruit chutneys. It was actually something different. I don't know what you guys think.
I think it's a little bit tough to get that from the, I don't know exactly what the real story is. What I know is that it was certainly more on the sauce, sort of savory sauce side, but it was one of many products that Heinz was making that you could then like consume at home with your meals. So some of them were sweet, some of them were savory.
And then the big change for modern ketchup consumers was when you've been telling this before, is when sodium benzoate became illegal to use. That was the big shift in ketchup flavor.
So that was, I believe, in the early 1900s, in the 20s, something like that. And all the ketchup manufacturers at the time, they were using a preservative called sodium benzoate, which still exists. And the FDA came out and said, they essentially banned it. They said it's terribly unsafe for people. It causes all sorts of diseases. And so Heinz removed that as a preservative and upped the vinegar content, because vinegar is a great natural preservative.
Uh-huh.
And then to keep that balance, people had to add more salt and more sugar, and they ended up with a formula that was probably better balanced, tasted better, and they were the first ones to do it. So then their market share just grew exponentially from there.
And I mean, it tasted better. It's like, better, I don't even think describes it. It's kind of like, I feel like ketchup is, as you were saying before, it's like this kind of this flavor profile that's like, you know, crack for your palate.
Right.
You know, like, it hits every single possible sensor at once. As humans, we'll eat anything covered in ketchup because it's just exactly what they want.
Yeah. And, you know, parents are always worried, well, my kids aren't going to like Sir Kensington because it's less sweet or less whatever, but kids love it. I mean, kids like it. It is sweet. It has sugar in it, but it's not as sweet. It's not as cloying, but it has taste, and I think kids like it.
It has more than, it actually has three different, doesn't it have three different kinds of sweeteners?
Or
just two?
It has raw sugar, which is 90% of where the sweetness comes from, a little bit of honey and a little bit of agave nectar.
And then the tomato has a natural sweetness as well.
Right.
Which is a mixture of fructose and glucose.
So do you remember back when you were doing your Sir Kensington, you had I cannot say his name today. Sir Kensington invited your friends back in college. He was already around. He was already inviting people to his tasting salons. Yeah. What were some of the early comments, and how have you shifted how the product is made since that time?
Well, one of the things that we shifted over time is the vinegar content. Because obviously to achieve that balance is a very important part. So I think earlier on we were a little light on that, and we took some feedback to increase that and create that better balance and more tartness. And and right now we're really working on finding natural ways to get it to stick to fries better. Actually,
I'm glad you brought that up, because right before we went to break, you brought that up, and it seems like that must be a humongous, for people who make ketchup, its fry stickability must just be top of mind.
It's
all the
critical
time.
Piece
it's
of
in the
puzzle.
Top three at all times.
What are the other two?
Oh man, what are the other
what
two?
What do ketchup people worry about?
Well, actually, you know, one of the tests I think that a lot of people do is they put it on a burger and they see if they can taste it. And it's actually funny because you need to, even any ketchup that you use, most burgers are so incredibly flavorful and mm-hmm. fatty and rich and full of, you know, that protein taste that you got to put a lot of any ketchup on a burger to really taste it. But, you know, that's the test we have to pass is put it on the burger and taste it.
So, and I know you're at the Little Owl here in New York City. And that's exactly what he told me is that, you know, he said his burger was incredibly flavorful and Sir Kensington stands up to it.
Well, what we try and do is I think most ketchup, normal ketchups, they'll be the only thing you taste on a fry.
Right.
And people use fries just as a conduit. But we're really trying to be a complement to food. So it's not just the ketchup that you taste. It's the, you know, it's the rosemary. It's the sea salt. It's whatever.
I remember you telling me, I think early on when you went to the fancy food show. Was it still here in New York? New York, it's when you went?
Well, the first time, yes.
Yeah. So that, yeah. And someone, I don't remember what, I don't know if it was it Dina DeLuca?
Yeah.
And so for her, the test was that, I think you should just tell me. Yeah. she put a chip in it. Or,
she right? came by, she didn't, her tag was flipped over, so I had no idea who she was. And she took we had like potato chips because we didn't have fries. And she took it and she stuck it in the ketchup and waited to see if it would fall over. And she said, this is the first like gourmet sort of natural ketchup that I've ever done this to that it didn't fall over. So it was thick enough. It was all about thickness.
Right. And then she probably just went and texted. Was it Moskowitz? Is that his name? Yeah. Like, I feel like they were like, yeah. We found it.
They were all checking. Yeah.
Right. The Holy Grail.
And the lesson is read the ingredients label.
Yeah.
So, you know, we're really proud that our first ingredient is tomatoes. And that's something you can, to achieve that level of viscosity, you can really only achieve that with tomatoes as the first ingredient.
Well, how does, would a chip stand up in Heinz?
Well, you know, given the high fructose corn syrup,
right, it
and
does.
The concentrate, it does. But in terms of a natural ketchup, I think that's what she was comparing yeah. us right. to as other natural ketchups.
I wish that we had some here to taste because it would be, as we've been talking about.
No, we have some. We brought some.
But also, like, when you've been talking about Annie's, and it'd be
yeah.
so neat to.
Oh, yeah. You know, well, they have the other stuff here, you know.
What do they? What's the other stuff, Hunts? What's the other stuff?
Like the big
other, the non-Sir Kensingtons.
Oh, the non-Sir Kensingtons. Do they? Oh, here at Roberta's is what yes. this is where this where the show is.
To be fair, we haven't yet approached them.
Well, you can do it right now.
We might.
They have a good burger. They have a burger that needs a ketchup.
It looked great.
Or a ketchup pizza would be good too.
That's pretty good. Yeah.
Have you made it? Have you made pizza with Sir Kensingtons? Probably made everything with Sir Kensingtons at this point.
My girlfriend's aunt has actually done that.
Really?
And people have used it for pasta sauce. We have a gazpacho recipe. People make cocktails with it.
Oh yeah, cocktails seem like I mean, I have definitely eaten it with a spoon. Really,
nothing wrong with that.
So when you were getting ready to, before you came, you guys came back and decided to from California and you started thinking about this. What did you see yourselves doing when you graduated from college?
Well, we both actually already had corporate jobs,
yeah.
and then we left those mm-hmm. and pursued the ketchup.
But was food ever a part of how you saw your career path?
I don't think it was ever part of my career path per se. But I grew up. My dad's Lebanese, so I was always around food. Mm-hmm. That's sort of how we got along. We both loved food and were always eating out or cooking in and that sort of thing. But I don't know if I ever saw myself working in food. But now I can't imagine doing anything else.
And it's funny to me because of the type of product ketchup is and its complexity, it's like you know food in this way that most, even, you know, some people who cook on a daily basis for a living, it's like now the way you've had to think about this food product, not just in terms of learning how to produce it on a large scale, but just the complexity and history and scientific makeup of this one particular product. Are there other ketchup people in the United States that you're now kind of like a part of?
Absolutely.
There
yeah,
are.
There are definitely people out there that make ketchup, mm-hmm. you know, and every ketchup is different. Mm-hmm. And, you know, our approach is really a rising tide floats all boats. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that the more awareness that ketchup can be different, the better.
I was just going to say, I think also working in the food world just heightens your sensitivity to sort of thinking about every detail.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it, like a place like Roberta's, they have an amazing beer selection. But it would be, you know, if the beer world were where the ketchup world is now, it would be like when you walk in, the only three beers they had were Bud Light, Miller Light, Coors Light. That's what it's like, except you only get one choice.
I mean, I do feel like it's kind of astonishing that ketchup still is in this early place because everything else is now so like micro and
right.
craft. It's, you know, it's really a testament to both what you do and also just the power of like this product that it's like still this one concept in everyone's minds.
Right.
And since we're about to be out of time, I need to be sure to let everyone know that there are that you are sold in 48 states, and I think for the two states where people live that it isn't sold, they can probably get it online.
You just
want to tell me your website address?
We are located at SirKensingtons.com.
It's totally worth checking out, if only to just laugh hysterically at the legend of Sir Kensington. And then, be sure to ask these guys for a mustache when you email them.
I do have one last trivia question here.
So. Oh, great.
Okay. I guessed the creator of our theme song.
Okay, so this is a quote from a movie. Just tell me what movie this is from.
Oh, man.
One day there were three tomatoes walking down the street. A mama tomato.
Pulp Fiction.
There you go.
With that, this is Feature Maker. I have the two founders from Sir Kensington's Gourmet Scooping Ketchup. Thank you guys very much.
Thanks for listening to this program on the Heritage Radio Network. You can find all of our archived programs on heritageradionetwork.com, as well as a schedule of upcoming live shows. You can also podcast all of our programs
on iTunes
by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store. You can find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter for up-to-date news and information. Thanks for listening.